That's all. Welcome back. Joseph Cordell. Joe Cordell's with us. He's the author of The 10 Mistakes Men Make. And he's an attorney, and he warns men about the 10 stupidest missteps in divorce. You got to love every second of that. He's the founder, with his wife, Cordell & Cordell, the nation's largest law firm focusing on men's divorce. He created the popular website, dadsdivorce.com, for men facing divorce. Again, the 10 stupidest mistakes men make when facing divorce. Joe, hey, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me,
Mike. Oh, thank you so much for being here. You know, divorce, for some reason, it's probably one of the most used things in the country right now. I think the last time I heard the stats, and stop me if I'm wrong, first marriages end up with 55-60% divorced in the first year or two.
Yeah, it's the statistics are a little unclear, but it's somewhere in the range between 50% and 60% on the divorce rate.
What do you think causes that?
Well,
that's a tough question.
There are a variety of things you can look to, not the least of which is no-fault divorce. It encourages this sort of swinging door approach to marriage.
Okay, now, one of the stats, and this is from your press release, you got over 500,000 men are going to face divorce. Most of them make at least, they're going to irreversible. They make mistakes. They really louse things up. And I know a big mistake I made when I got divorced was I said, oh, here, take everything. It's yours. Wrong move. Okay. But the point is they do make some dumb mistakes.
They do, and interestingly, it is that this is an area where men can least afford to make mistakes because they're in a court system which in many cases is tilted slightly, in some cases more than slightly in others, against them. And as a result, it's critical that if they're going to achieve their goals that they perform their best, that they spend a little more effort, be a little more assertive, a little more careful than their opponent. And unfortunately, guys instead sort of swagger into the divorce court, either that or they go into the divorce court with the other scenario where they simply have thrown their hands up and thrown themselves more or less to the mercy of the opposing party, in which rarely is there is any. So guys need a book that calls their attention to perhaps the 10 most common serious mistakes that guys make when facing divorce.
But one of the things, Joe, and I think this is interesting, that the courts have been, and I don't know if it still runs true today, but the courts have always been prone to the woman because the woman's going to get the kids and so on and so forth, which is not always the case today. So effectively, is this what a guy's going up against if he's going to go into a divorce? You got the wife coming after him, and you've also got the judge that's going to come after him also. How do you maneuver around the judge? How do you become equal in that place of divorce?
Well, I think that it's going to be difficult to change societal attitudes and much less to change the legal system in a short period of time. So Cordell & Cordell, our focus and my focus in the book is to try to think about, well, how do we deal with this from a practical standpoint, which comes to your question. Who are the parties that guys have to get the attention of, the participants that can change their outcome? Well, obviously the judge, but I'm reluctant to pin this simply on judges who are not fair. I think that increasingly judges are starting to think very fairly about it, and in some jurisdictions they're quite fair, but that's not the majority. The majority is a situation where the entire system has a mindset that's contrary to the dad's best interest or that is favoring the mother. And that includes social workers, psychologists, opposing counsel, legislatures to some extent, but even the attorneys themselves, many of whom, of course, represent men, they themselves find themselves throwing up their hands and deciding at some point in their career that they're not going to swim upstream, that it's requires far less effort, and perhaps more excusably, they might be thinking that it's pointless, that guys will spend money and get nowhere. So you have attorneys who are coming in representing guys who are just very passive. I mean, they've resigned themselves to what they think is going to happen to their client. They tell their clients that they need to resign themselves to that.
So a lot of it has reversed itself. You know, there's many times in the long run, it's the substance of what we're dealing with, and it matters more than the process does. And I think what's happened is the process has outweighed itself in value over the substance, and the process is more important. And there's a lot of men who have fell through the cracks because of this and ended up on the wrong end of it. I still say to this day, if a guy's got a couple of kids, and he should be there to support and to help as much as he can, but at the same time, once somebody's gone through a divorce and there's child support involved and so on and so forth, and they take whatever percentage that they take away from the guys, how do they go on to another life? And I think part of the divorce process is getting yourself restructured and not make the mistake the second time around. And the problem, I think, Joe, is there's not only one, but two and three and four divorces along the way until they get to a point of what's going to work anymore in today's culture and society.
Yeah, there are those guys who are kind of repeat offenders, so to speak. I mean, guys who just exercise poor judgment. It can certainly happen to any of us in one marriage, but I really wonder about clients who it's their second, third, or fourth divorce. And at some point, guys have to quit choosing women that are bad candidates for wives. And often clients will be sitting in my office saying, can you believe this woman, what she's done? And I can't. I mean, I find it incredible. But equally incredible, I'm thinking, you know, this woman probably didn't transform from an attractive, desirable young lady into this overnight. And there probably were seeds of that in the early relationship. So one way to address this problem is for guys to be much more careful early in the process about the decision of marriage. And that means more often than not waiting until you're older to get married. I tell my daughters who are 13 and 15, I'm already conditioning them, telling them that they don't think about divorce until, or about marriage until they're 30. And I think that the statistics bear out that if people wait, they're more likely to make a better decision. And it does mean that guys have to be more responsible, too, when they get into the divorce process.
Oh, sure. There's got to be a model to follow. And the way that you get the model is not going out there and falling down and thinking that you've learned lessons and it's going to be different next time. The way to get the model, and I really, I'm almost at that point of believing that if you're going to get married, you get a marriage license, that you got to go through some kind of a course that says, this is what marriage is. This is what the responsibilities are, and on and on. So there's a model. And I also believe if somebody's thinking about divorce, before they even go through the actual process itself, find the model, create the model, sit down with somebody like yourself who have seen the good, bad, and the indifferent when it comes to divorces, and decide what you're going to do and the best way to do it. I think somebody gets mad at somebody, they decide they want a divorce, and then the anger starts, and every attorney that I've known, colleagues, friends, people I've interviewed say the same thing. If you put your emotion into the divorce, it's going to cost you more money than it should.
Yeah, and the challenge is, of course, divorcing, pardon the word, but divorcing from the process, all this maelstrom of emotion. If divorce could be approached from a business standpoint in which the guy, at least, and preferably both parties, are thinking, you know, in very pragmatic terms, then I think that sure, the conflict would be far less, and presumably guys would end up with better outcomes. But the fact is that it's hard to get either side of the table to approach the process that way, and particularly the side of the table, incidentally, Michael, who's being left. I mean, the notion that divorces are truly a joint decision is a bit of a myth. I mean, it happens, but it happens in such a small percentage of the cases.
Sure.
The vast majority of cases involve somebody who's decided they want to move on, usually because they've met someone else, and then the other person who's being left. Well, the person who's being left is far less inclined to grease the skids of the process and to think in an entirely dispassionate way about what's happening around them, to them.
Sure, you're talking about revenge, and that's really what it is. And the resolve is not about having revenge against that person, turning the kids against that person. It doesn't matter if it's the man or the woman. So when the emotions get involved in it, then the problems start, the games start, and you don't really get what you want. Let's move to something else. Let's move to something called a prenup, the prenuptial agreement. Joe, are those good things for people to sit down and discuss before they even get married?
Certainly they are. They've never really gained a lot of momentum in our culture among those that are below the very upper echelons. Now, you do find them gaining a popularity among older middle-class Americans. But I think that it's going to be difficult to sell it to the under 30s who get married at a time when they have no assets. And quite frankly, they may not be confident that they're ever going to have assets. They don't have children, and under those circumstances, they're thinking that, you know, this prenup is addressing something that is entirely speculative. So it's a really hard sell, and those, unfortunately, are the cases where it can become most expensive and most ugly when the parties are 40 years old, 15-year marriage, they have minor children, everything they own is marital, you know, businesses that have been built, retirement plans, etc. Then, of course, they're thinking, you know, it may have made sense to do that, but you know, the cow's out of the barn.
You know,
but
we should
think that it's easy to persuade people who have property, they've been divorced, to definitely do the prenup the next go around.
Now, by the way, I've been married and divorced, and I'm going to go out and get a T-shirt. I'm going to get entrepreneur T-shirts for every guy who's been divorced. And I think what we're going to say on it after listening to everything you're saying, it's no place for amateurs.
Well, there's the truth to that. But you know, other people, I mean, how many people do you know who've gotten a prenup except the wealthy or the older people who are working,
their
families are grown, and they have children and grandchildren?
Yeah. And by the way, in a monetary measurement, it really doesn't establish what that marriage meant. And there are so many people, and it's very hard. I'm quite confident that when I got divorced, we were still friends today. It was, what, six, seven, nine, well, almost 10 years ago. And we're still friends today. Everything's fine. She's remarried. We talk. But the point of contention is that when you do get divorced, it's very hard to go to the table, values neutral, and create from there. Someone, and we've touched on this, someone is going to want to get the other guy, quote unquote. And there's where the problem is, and that's why I think that people should sit down with somebody before they decide to get divorced and run through it, and this is the consequence if you do that. This is the consequence if you do this. And they may just realize that some of the steps that they take and the mistakes that they make can be avoided, and the consequence for making the mistakes are worse than sitting down and listening and coming in with some logic.
Yes, I agree with approaching it with some efforts from that end, and then on the opposing end, I think that it makes sense, Michael, to think about treating the marital contract as a real contract, and when you breach a contract, and particularly one so solemnly entered into, I mean, a promise before, you know, God, family, and friends that this is a lifetime decision, then if that person is making the decision that they want to breach the contract and move on, then it shouldn't be no fault. There should be a penalty clause. The other party who has experienced, without question, damages that have resulted from the breach, then I think that they should be able to recover those. And that would make people, number one, pause a little longer, perhaps, before they run into a marriage.
Oh,
and
by the
way, it would make them pause before they run out of a marriage.
Now, by the way, a good point here. Let's go for some words that are operative here. It's a contract, and a contract is a binding something, and it's like going into business. If you were going to go into business with somebody and there was going to be a share or split of money, you're not going to go in on a handshake anymore. You're going to contract. You're going to have a contract, and it's going to spell certain things out. I think the problem with the marriage contract, it is a contract. It's legal. It's binding, but it doesn't spell anything out. It doesn't tell you how you have to be, and if you do certain things, it's dissolved, you're out, and you're gone. And maybe if it was treated more like a business contract, it would be easier to move once the two decide they don't want to be with each other anymore.
Yeah, I think you're right, and it makes sense that it would be treated that way. The single largest business transaction that most human beings will go through, at least in America, is their marriage vow. Because what that does is it encompasses all of not only that they presently possess, although they can potentially treat that as separate, but it picks up every additional dollar that they make going forward. And it's a huge deal that interestingly enough, people who are far more careful about decisions they make routinely about, you know, the purchase of a piece of real estate, a house, or investment decisions regarding the 401k, not to mention the ways in which they strategize and build their business. And yet they go into this marriage as if it's not the gravest financial decision they'll ever make.
Well, by the way, when we talk about decisions and going into contract, I was thinking about this as you were talking. And as an attorney, if you sat down and you worked with a business, you'd create a contract. Now, there's two pieces of a contract. There's the express, which you write down, and this is how you do, but there's also the implied. And I think it's the implied that gets missed. If I'm standing there in front of a group of people, and I'm getting married, and I say, I promise to love you and vow to do this, 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 and that, and whatever, that's a contract. It is an implied contract, even though you didn't write it down. And I really, truly believe if somebody took somebody to court and said, this is what you've said, this is what you promised, based on that, this is what my gain or my losses were, and there could be some effect of that.
Yeah, and well, and at a minimum, we know that there's a breach of their decision to get divorced, and so we know that there was a pledge made that they would love, honor, cherish,
yeah,
you know, so long as either of them shall live, and so I think that if we reverted back to a system that, quite frankly, was in place for hundreds of years before. I mean, this is not new. What's new is a no-fault divorce, which is a product of the late 60s. There was a part of the women's liberation movement that felt that it was in women's interest to do this, and I disagree. I think it's disserved men and women, the no-fault divorce. It may have disserved men more. We could argue about that. But it should be something that everybody can agree that it's not been in the interest of our country or the participants.
Yeah, no, and I love it. And when you really come down to it, and I'm going to go back to where I was a little while ago, if we leave the gotchas at the door and we sit down and we're there to construct, and if we construct and we start it from the beginning, you had a contract, now that contract is void, we want it void, so we're going to recreate another contract. And a divorce, I guess, Joe, when you come down to it, and I hadn't thought about it this way, but a divorce is also another contract, isn't it?
Of sorts.
Yeah.
Yeah, it can be. If it's a settlement agreement, yes, it can be a contract.
Yeah. That's it. Thanks. After this show, I'm never getting married again. I don't want to go through it.
Well, I've enjoyed the conversation.
Yeah. No, it's wonderful. Let me ask you this now. From my experience and all the years, that attorneys can only do business in the states that they are licensed to do business in. What if somebody's listening to the show, they're not in the state, but they've heard and they like what you had to say, Joe Cordell, and they want more information? What do we do? How do we do it to get a hold of you?
Well, Cordell & Cordell is a firm that is national, meaning we're in 20-plus states.
Okay.
And we have attorneys that practice law in many states. So they're welcome to look us up online at CordellCordell.com. I can tell you a wonderful website is DadsDivorce.com, where our lawyers have contributed over the years, I'm sure, 1,000-plus articles that are it's all free, and it's all incredibly helpful. So those two things I'd mention. And then, of course, the book that just came out, The 10 Stupidest Mistakes Men Make When Facing Divorce, in bookstores across America. But if someone wants to get it more quickly, I would suggest consider ordering it from Amazon or one of the online sources. And for guys, I would suggest in particular, think about a digital version so you don't have this hardback book lying around the house.
Yeah, I had to think about that one. She comes to the kitchen table.
That can be difficult to explain.
Oh, there's the problems. Hey, Joe, thank you so much for joining us. I thought that was great. Take care.
Thank you, Michael. Take care.
Good night.
That's all. I can only give you country walks in springtime. and a hand to hold when leaves begin to fall, and a love who's burning light.